This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon. As we venture into hour number two of Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, we are at 814 Elm Street in the beautiful Beacon Building. One floor down, right in front of the beautiful piano, our glassed-in kitchen studio. You're welcome to just stop by and browse or have a little meal upstairs, a level above us where you can actually see down to the studio at the Midtown Cafe. And today I had a delicious panini, vegetarian panini sandwich, and I don't know what else is on the... I usually check the menu board when I come in, but I was running late, so I didn't bother looking today.
No, I didn't see what it was either.
But it's always a good homemade soup.
It is.
You know, there's been a lot of gazpacho this summer, which is good with all the hot weather we've had, but a vegetable or you'll find a chicken soup, whatever. So, in fact, Red Arrow Diners, one of our sponsors of Food for Thought, Manchester Milford, and now in Londonderry, also Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford, Londonderry, and now North Conway. And Healthy Solutions Spice Blends available at most supermarkets near you, spiceblends.com. And we have Shelley Walcott, the owner and creator, on with us every other week. And well, she always brings us good stuff, doesn't she?
I know. I love having Shelley on, and I love just learning about new ways to use her spice blends. They're so versatile.
Yes. Hey, we've got a really interesting guest coming up just ahead of what you have for us, Carol. At 1:30, we'll be talking to, I guess you'd call her a cookbook author, and also a woman who runs the mom100.com. Her name is Katie Workman. Her book is Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, Including You. And I know that you've already fallen in love with the cookbook, haven't you?
I love the cookbook. I've said this before, I'm like a cookbook fiend, although I don't use them as much as I should use them, you know? I might use it for, you know, like I did see a couple recipes in here, and I will try them. And then it'll just go on my, you know, my little...
I know.
Counter, and then I won't use it again.
They look nice. I mean, they just add to the kitchen,
it does.
I think many of us have gone to the internet for something real quick that we don't think we can find in our cookbooks.
Easy that way.
Either we're lazy or there's just so much more, though, really. It's like having a million cookbooks at your fingertips, yet I'm like you. I like to have them around.
Yeah.
Barb says, we got to move them. They're taking up too much space. Okay, I'll move them up my office. I'm not getting rid of them because I love cookbooks. I really do. So
I do too.
We'll be talking to the author of the cookbook that I told you about called
Dinner Solved.
Dinner Solved. Katie Workman joining us in just a little bit. And I know tonight you are making a meal that will include an ingredient that we received at the Hopkinton State Fair over the weekend, some kind of a maple barbecue sauce.
It's a maple barbecue sauce.
I mean, it looks like, almost like syrup, right? It doesn't have that reddish typical
color.
Well,
they said it was 70% maple syrup, and then there's the other ingredients are all, you know, seasonings and stuff. And there's even some red pepper flakes in there, too, so give it a little bit of a zip. But you basically take a pound of ground hamburger and mix a half to three quarters of a cup of that barbecue sauce in it and just make your patties. He says it's going to be the best burger you'll ever have.
Well, I'm thinking, because there's a lot of sugar in maple syrup, that it might caramelize on the grill. I don't know, depending on how hot you get the griddle.
Yeah.
Got to get it good and hot.
Yeah.
I actually cracked it open yesterday. I made just a very basic, boring hamburger patty. Turkey burgers. And so what I did is I put a little mustard, you know, once I took it off the grill, and then I drizzled some of the barbecue sauce. I thought, well, I'll try it this way. And it mixed really good with the mustard.
They said the flavor comes out even better with ground turkey. So you should have tried that.
Oh, yeah. It was already pre-made, and I didn't want to.
Oh, you know, yeah.
But I definitely will be using it because I can't wait to see what else it does. So I want to hear tomorrow about your recipe.
I'll be anxious to try it myself. Excuse me, myself. Mm-hmm. You know who I had a conference call with this morning? And, you know, Amanda and I had a conference call with SiriusXM Radio.
Oh, no kidding.
In New York City.
All right. Satellite service.
Yes. They are doing a huge promo with us. On the primary. The day before and the day after. And, I mean, and after talking to him today, I mean, they already had their PR person fly out to the diner just to make sure.
Did you know they were coming out?
Oh, yeah. No, I had it all. That was like a month or so ago. And today I talked with somebody else in charge, but just about the details, they're going to be sending out a press release. And
so is it one of like the talk stations?
Oh, yeah. They're going to broadcast from the diner the day before, three shows, and the day of, two shows.
Now, do you know who the host is?
You know... You know, I do have the name of one of them upstairs. They mentioned it, but as it gets a little closer, I'll let you know. But yeah, it's going to be huge. I mean, they're going to be moving two booths out of there. I mean, we have a whole agreement that, you know, and they're going to be serving. They want to give.
So they're going to compensate you for the business you're going to lose, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're also going to do free breakfast. They're going to pay for the breakfast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, the morning of the primary.
I think about doing this show from the air.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because you're going to have so many people right there that you can talk to.
Yeah, got to do something, for sure. It should be really fun.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be this big, and it's going to be, it's pretty huge.
And this year with so many candidates, even though there'll be a few falling by the wayside before next February, they'll still be a lot, probably 8 or 10 anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
That's exciting. So, well, that's very cool.
It is pretty exciting. It was. I was like, I hung up the phone and I'm like, yikes, this is going to be huge.
Exactly. So, did you have fun? Did you and Daryl have fun at the Hopkinton State Fair?
We did. I like the fair, just, you know, walking around, people watching. Mac and the Big Cheese,
who
too
were our guests.
Bad.
Yeah,
I didn't stay.
I tried to find it. I'm wandering around. I'm trying to listen to all the sound. And
it was in a weird place. When I saw it, I was like, that's it. Like, I thought it would be bigger. Anyway, they were so funny. We sat in the front row right in front of them, literally. and they didn't start till 2:30.
So they were a half hour late. Yeah, I'd have been fine. But I figured, well, it's 20 after. I can't find it. I'm going to miss half the show. I'll just go home. So, oh, bummer.
They were pretty funny. They're good guys.
So hilarious. What kind of stuff were they making? Just
they
basic
did
campfire
a,
stuff?
Yeah, and they said that they made it up at the grocery store because they like to always do different things because they have repetitive people that come.
Oh, right.
And it was basically sautéed onions and peppers mixed with mixed with chicken. And they kind of made it Asian, so they poured some Asian, stuff in it and kind of mixed it around.
Did people get to sample any of it afterwards?
Oh, yeah. They put it all in little cups after.
Oh, they did?
And you could go up and, you know, grab what you wanted.
For those that may have missed it, these are two guys that are stand-up comics that found that they have a common love and appreciation of food and worked it into a sort of an outdoor cooking thing for camping or for barbecuing. Throw a lot of comedy in it, and
they were hilarious.
Did they bring anybody up in the audience?
No, they didn't do that.
No.
They didn't do that. But they were picking on a guy that was right behind me, who was like an older man. He was very stoic. You know, he didn't smile, and he kept picking on him.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. It was pretty funny. But
I bet you they had a really good turnout this weekend because the weather was just fantastic.
It was absolutely perfect all weekend, really.
So my friend, Matt Forrest, who is the announcer, the official announcer for the State Fair, is there every year. He's the guy. He's got a great voice, and he's been doing it forever. And we had booked him to try to come on the show, and he sent a very apologetic note to me last night when the fair was over. He said, I'm so sorry. I wanted to come, you know, be with you and Carol. But the fair kind of pushed him into duty of announcing the tractor pull at the time. He wasn't expecting that. So he had to do some announcing, you know, for the fair and couldn't come visit with us. So
that was nice of him.
Yeah, it was nice because he's a very thoughtful guy.
Yeah.
So
We didn't talk about the food holiday. So before we go to break, we can do that. It is one of my favorite things when I go out to breakfast, which I'm not a big breakfast person, but biscuits and gravy week.
Oh,
like sausage gravy, homemade sausage gravy.
Remember, biscuits and gravy was one of the potato chips, one of the Lay's potato chips choices.
And I didn't really like it.
No, it was a little too abstract, I think.
I
think I could taste the sage in it, but that was about it. So biscuits and gravy are a favorite of yours.
I love homemade sausage gravy. I don't even like the biscuit. And and if I go, you know, to breakfast, I'll just get a side of it. I don't like the biscuit. But, Homemade sausage gravy is one of my things, and it's also National Waffle Week.
Oh, well, next week is National Vegetarian Week.
Oh,
and let me tell you something. I had no trouble finding comedy cold
cuts.
Six of them, to be exact.
Oh my goodness,
it's hilarious. The stuff that the comedians have come up with.
I bet
you know
that
it's
would
really
be hilarious.
When you go to a YouTube video, which is where I get these things from, usually there's a, you know, liked it thumbs up or didn't like it thumbs down. And typically 98% are thumbs up and you get a very low percentage that are thumbs down. Well, there was a, I would say about a 30%, as I looked across all of them, don't like because I think that vegetarian people feel they're being picked on. So if you're a vegetarian and you listen to that and you can't laugh at yourself, of course, you're not going to like it. None of it, in my opinion, was offensive. Otherwise, I wouldn't have picked it. But funny stuff this Friday, 12:30 to 1.
Oh, gosh.
Celebrating Vegetarian
Week.
That is
funny. I'll have to have Tyler make sure he listens.
Now, you're talking about chicken gravy or gravy and biscuits. We have a little time here before we talk to our author. So I ran across something that I love Kentucky Fried Chicken. Don't have it often. You and I have spoken about this often. And recently there have been a number of commercials with some Saturday Night Live guys playing the part of Harlan Colonel Sanders. One, the first one was, I want to say Darren or Daryl something from Saturday Night Live. Then the other, second one has been Norm MacDonald. I don't know if you've seen the commercials.
No.
But anyway, definitely not, you know, they should just have stayed away from, you know, that whole thing. Anyway, I ran across something over the weekend. Seven things you didn't know about Colonel Sanders.
Oh.
Yeah, and maybe.
Oh, I love those. I love those.
Exactly. So I'll run through these. Number one, for most of his life, he was a terrible businessman. Most customers probably don't realize the Colonel only became a successful restaurateur after failed careers as a lawyer, insurance salesman, lamp salesman, and tire salesman.
No way.
Sanders often made unwise business gambles and had a habit of getting into fights that often resulted in being fired. Sometimes that suited him as a self-employed entrepreneur, but that was less ideal as a company spokesperson later in life, as you'll find out when I get to like number six and seven. Number two of seven things you don't know about Colonel Sanders. He once shot somebody for his brand. When Sanders painted a large sign pointing potential customers from the highway toward his gas station in Corbin, Kentucky, which would eventually become his first cafe, he enraged the owner of a competing gas station, Matt Stewart. Stewart painted over Sanders' sign, leading to Sanders threatening to blow his bleeping head off and repainting the sign himself.
Oh, my goodness.
Number three, I'm not even going to get into because it's very personal and very, very naughty.
Uh-oh.
Number four, Colonel Sanders, he is not a military colonel. If you're not from Kentucky, you may have assumed that Sanders served as a military leader at some point in his long life. I would have thought so, right? Colonel Sanders, sure.
So.
How could he call himself? In fact, he was a Kentucky colonel, a title of honor awarded by the state of Kentucky. Nothing to do with the military. So I don't know if he ever served, but so he is not a veteran as far as we know. Number five about the colonel that you didn't know, he only made... Well, how much money do you think he made when he sold Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Well, I would think he...
Pretty big brand, you know?
I would think. A couple million? Because I can tell by the way you're saying it.
Yeah, no, you nailed it exactly. $2 million. You hit it right on the head.
And that's it?
That's it. After KFC went from a single cafe to a franchised concept, Sanders sold the business in 1964, feeling out of his league at the age of 75 as the chain rapidly grew. The $2 million plus an ongoing salary to remain the face of the brand wasn't a terrible deal. However, after the company's profitable IPO, or initial public offering, in which shareholders made millions, Sanders began to feel as though he got the short end of the stick. Probably did.
Yes, kind of sounds like he did.
So check this out. Number six of seven things you didn't know about Colonel Sanders. He tried to sue KFC for $122 million.
Oh, my God.
All right. So after KFC was sold to Hubline in 1971, Sanders' appetite for disruption grew. When the chain denied him the right to open an antebellum-themed restaurant selling original recipe chicken, Sanders sued the company for $122 million. He eventually settled out of court for $1 million and promised the colonel would stop embarrassing the company. Sanders did not keep up his end of the bargain, which brings us to number seven, the final.
This is interesting.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah. I find all those so interesting.
Number seven, there's probably a book out there somewhere this came from. So it sounds like a book that would be worth reading because, I mean, he was really, you know, not a liked guy in many, you know, especially by a number of ex-husbands. But anyway, going back to number three that I didn't read. Number seven, according to him, KFC doesn't use the famous secret original recipe of 11 herbs and spices. While very few people in the world know exactly what is in Colonel Sanders' mix of 11 secret herbs and spices, we do know that the Colonel said many times in his life that KFC stopped using his recipe. As KFC is intensely protective of the recipe, it is a difficult matter to fact check. The chain reports that it keeps Colonel Sanders' handwritten recipe of 11 herbs and spices safely locked away in a vault, utilizing two suppliers to preserve the secrecy of the ingredients. Whether or not the Colonel's original recipe is in use today, it is clear that Sanders was dismissive of KFC's menu in his final years. In 1970, The New Yorker quoted him saying the company's new gravy recipe, quote, ain't fit for my dogs. While the chain turned business around and reportedly improved food quality in the 80s under new ownership, Sanders wasn't around to see it. He died December 16th, 1980, at the age of 90. And those are seven things that you didn't know about Colonel Harlan Sanders from Kentucky.
When we go to break, I'm reading number three.
Well, I didn't print it out here, but I'll share with you the basics of what it entails.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is off the internet, but it's a reliable source. And
interesting.
Uh-huh. I think almost everybody has some skeletons in their closet.
Of course.
I mean, he was
has quite a few.
He's got quite a few. And because he was such a public figure, somebody was interested in finding out what they were. A lot of people are far worse than him, but of course they're not famous, so nobody really cares. I don't know. So that's the latest. I'm going to start writing that
Colonel
book on you, Carol.
Sanders. On me. Well, like I've told you many times, the Red Arrow, we could write a book, make more money, or a reality show.
Yes,
for
that
sure.
That would be so cool.
Hilarious. Yeah. Is it time to go to break?
Yeah,
do we have a couple minutes.
Yeah, we probably have a minute or two. But if we go to break now, we'll be back and be ready for when our guest calls. So it's up to you. If you have a little something,
I do have a little something. And this was, I think, probably almost the same. Well. The site Thrillist.
Yes.
I love Thrillist.
I love it too.
Mm-hmm. But 11 Disneyland secrets revealed.
Okay.
Which I kind of thought was so interesting. I started reading a few of them. Did you know that there's a members only bar by Pirates of the Caribbean?
I did.
You did?
Well, only because I think I read the same thing that you did.
Oh, okay.
But there are some people that have been to Disney 100 times, and I don't get that.
Well, it's secret, though. It's members only.
Yeah.
Now, listen to this.
Okay.
Club 33 is the only place in the entire park that serves alcohol, and you've probably walked by it a dozen times without noticing.
Huh.
Located behind a nondescript door next to the Blue Bayou with a simple 33 inscribed next to it. Club 33 has 500-ish members, cost over $10,000 to join, and $3,500 in annual dues, and has a cutoff wait list of more than 1,000. The door leads to an elevator that takes you upstairs to a massive club, which wraps around the heart of New Orleans Square and includes the bar, two luxurious dining rooms, Disney artifacts galore, and the park's most highly trained staff.
Wow. And I understand it's tough to get a reservation, too. You definitely have to have a reservation to get a table.
Yeah, I mean, it's members only.
Even though you pay $10,000
to join,
$3,000 a year to be a member.
That's like crazy.
I'm just not that interested.
Are
you a big Disney person?
I mean, Daryl's never been, so we're planning, we're going to do a Disney trip because he's never been. So
I think it's more fun as an adult.
I do. Yeah. You know, I've gone as an adult, and I love it. Like, oh, my gosh, yeah.
You'll go to one in Florida, right? Disney World in Orlando?
Yeah. Wait a minute. What is the other park? Universal.
Oh, Universal. Oh, yeah, that's nearby, too.
That's fun, too.
Cool.
So, I'll just read one more.
Okay.
Let me see. Oh, there's a secret private apartment that Walt and his family used to use.
Oh.
Until 1977, it was actually in service as part... Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I'm reading the wrong one. And you know, it didn't print on my...
Oh, bummer.
But it's where the... it was on Main Street, where the fire department is.
Okay.
And it's right upstairs of the fire department. So if Walt and his family came in, they, and they didn't feel like going home, they would just go right up there. And it was a fully furnished apartment up there.
Lots of little nooks and crannies that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Those are good ones.
It's pretty neat.
Nice.
All right. I'll save a few of them for another time. And we'll go to break. You're listening to Food for Thought. When we come back, we'll be talking with Katie Workman, author of Dinner Solved. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
We're at 131 on Food for Thought. Carol and Mike, brought to you by Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room for Food for Thought, and Kale and Company, and New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com. So Mike Morin along with Carol Lawrence. And we're very happy to be joined by the author of Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. And when you're cooking for kids, that is generally object number one, as we say hello to Katie Workman. You'll find her also at themom100.com. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing fine, thanks. Welcome. Carol and I both looked at this book and said, this is something that almost anybody can use and understand because of its flexibility. Plus, it's a pretty darn good-looking book as well, so nicely done.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So here's something that I took away from reading the book and understanding that you're really aiming this largely at families in one way, which covers, you know, from 1 to 100. Sometimes it can take, 8 to 10 times for a kid to like something new that you might be, you know, trying to get them to try?
It's true. Researchers who are much more scientifically trained than myself have documented the fact that a lot of times a kid will actually need to have to try something 8, 10 more times before that they'll embrace it. And what that means, of course, to us parents is that we can't just offer something once or twice, shrug our shoulders and say, I guess, you know, little Jimmy will never eat broccoli, because it's really up to us to just keep it in the offing and not to make a big deal. One bite, try it, shrug, don't like it. Okay, maybe next time. You try it again in a few weeks. But so it's a combination of not giving up, but it's also not forcing it down, because I think a lot of us grew up sitting at dinner tables with somebody saying, you're not leaving this table, young lady, till you've eaten every last green bean.
And even because I know I'm older than you, the saying was, there are hungry children starving in China right now, so you're going to eat this.
It didn't make the lima beans taste better.
No, it did not. Another way, you point out, to really get the kids to at least be inclined to try something is to get them involved in the kitchen.
It's the number one best way to move the needle. And the reason is not just because, you know, they can enjoy it, and, you know, whether they enjoy the creativity or sort of the science aspect, that's part of it. But it's also because you have to bring them in and give them choice. You have to say, this says season with salt to taste. Why don't you taste it? Do you think that, you know, how much salt do you think it needs? Or you might say, you know, ooh, that sounds, you know, this is, let's start adding the chili powder. You tell me when you think that this chili is spicy enough. All of a sudden, you're asking their opinions. They have some control in the matter, and they're going to have that pride of ownership when that meal hits the table at night, because they were part of it. They were part of the decision-making process. They weren't just the recipient. They weren't just a participant. They were actually guiding the process.
So I think I alluded to the fact that the way your book is structured and the recipes play out is there is a good deal of adaptability for differing tastes and flavors in a family, and it's a component that you call fork in the road. Explain that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. So the fork in the road is the idea that the recipes are, as you say, flexible or convertible. You can make a recipe up to a certain point and then separate part of it out and go in two different directions with the same recipe. So if you're making a chili, for instance, you might saute up your onions and garlic with zucchini and peppers, some vegetables, make your broth, add your seasonings, and then you pour half of it into one pot, add chicken to it, and there's your chicken white bean chili, and then you might add some extra vegetables, maybe some garbanzo beans or some tofu to the other pot, there's your vegetable chili. So you're really just, it's like one or two extra steps. You're not starting from scratch. You don't feel like a short order cook. But if you have a vegetarian in your house, they're getting what they want, and the meat eaters are getting what they want.
Now, did you kind of learn this concept the hard way as a mom yourself?
I think it was along the lines of, you know, I never knew also who was going to be at the table. You know, we have people over a lot. So if your kid invited over another kid, and all of a sudden you'd be serving something, and that's when that child would announce, I don't eat meat, or I don't like cilantro, or I hate spicy food. And at that point, there's really not much for you to do except for go start to boil some water for some pasta. And that's not fun for anybody. It's not nice to the cook, and it's not really nice for the kid. So if you have the ability to take a recipe in more than one direction, you might save yourself from having to sort of sigh and reach for those chicken nuggets again.
Talking to Katie Workman, her latest book, Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. And I'd like to get back to the kids needing to try something multiple times. We had a four-year-old over at our house over the weekend. It just kind of popped into my head here. He'd never actually had corn on the cob where you hold it in your hand and, and you know, eat it that way, because typically either you scrape it off the cob or got it out of a can. And we didn't really know what to expect, and it was met with some hesitation. But before the meal was over, he'd stripped that thing clean, although, granted, half of it was on the floor. But it still, he tried it, and he loved it. Now, he wasn't so crazy about my marinated turkey tips, but, hey, I'll take one out of two.
You know
for
what? One thing at a time. You know what's funny? You just my my friend, when her daughter was little, a daughter who's now about 30 years old, but my friend, when her daughter was little, when she had her first spare rib, she called it steak on the cob. Isn't that awesome?
I love that. You know, I could go through the book and just pull out a few specifics here, but spicy oven-fried chicken. I love making a fried chicken, although I'd love to know, what is the secret of a really crunchy skin, in your opinion? What's going to make it really pop in my mouth?
Well, there's a few things going on with that recipe, but one, I think, you know, it really is... you know, cooking it in oil first. And this chicken starts off in oil, so you do get that great crackly, crispy crust. And then after you start to, you know, seal that in, you transfer it to a wire rack, put on a baking sheet, and finish it in the oven. And that way, first of all the pieces come out at the same time, so you're not cooking in these incessant batches. And the other thing is you're using less oil, and it's finishing in the oven, and it's much more hands-off. So you're going to get the great crust that a quick dip in a little bit of oil will give you, and you're going to also get that nice moistness from the buttermilk brine that it sits in.
All right, we have just about 2 minutes left. I would love you to share the story of the gift that your husband gave you, knowing that you had considered possibly going into the food industry.
Oh, well, I share this story knowing that many women would gasp, thinking, "I can't believe that she got that for after she had given birth to a child." But I had always thought about going into the restaurant world. And my husband and I knew some people at a very well-known restaurant here in New York City. So he arranged for me to go have a 3-day apprenticeship, fancily called a stage, at this restaurant. And I went down there and I cooked my little heart out for 3 days. And I didn't end up going into the restaurant business, but not because I didn't love it. I loved working at the restaurant, but at the end, the chef de cuisine we were dicing potatoes, and he took his potatoes, and he said, you know, they all have to have square sides, equally, you know, right-angled sides, and I said, well, you know, so I did it, and I thought mine were okay, and he stacked his up. They looked like a column of dice going to the ceiling, and mine were, like, zigzagging all over the place like a child's Lego thing, and I just thought, you know what? I think I have more pleasure in cooking for people without worrying so much about the right angles of my potatoes.
What a great gift for your husband, though, and you both got something really wonderful out of it. You got a wonderful story for your cookbook, which is called Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. It's a split up into lots of different ways to create meals without any extra trouble, and you will not become a short order cook, but instead, everybody is happy. Enjoy talking to you, Katie. Thank you so much for joining us here on Food for Thought.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And again, you can find her, besides the book, she's got a website called themom100.com. So if Barb gets me a 3-day job at the Red Arrow, will you put me to work?
You know, when I have friends that say, oh, I've always wanted to own a diner, mm-hmm. I mean, you hear that so much. And I'm like, okay. Come and work at the diner, and you'll see, you know, you change your mind.
I don't know if I can cut potatoes so perfectly to stack them so they look like dice. But
yeah, you don't need
But I guess if you're in, like, a fine dining restaurant, everything is so precise and so perfect for presentation.
In that case, yes. And, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You have to, you know, even at the diner, you got to think of presentation and
yes.
stuff. But certainly not, you know, 2x2 pieces of, you know, diced potato.
How funny is that?
You know, funny.
All right. Well, I know you're going to be cooking stuff out of there in the near future.
You know what I had at the diner the other day? It's the Sunday's Blue Plate Special. And, oh, my God, I've been hearing about it, and because it's kind of a newer recipe, but homemade chicken croquettes. I just lost it in my head for a second. Did
oh,
you see that?
Really?
Homemade
you never see that.
Chicken croquettes.
Wow.
They were so fabulous. You know, this is kind of funny, power of social media. I took a picture of them, and I posted it on Facebook saying, you know, at the diner, having homemade chicken croquettes, today's Blue Plate special, whatever. And my son later called me that night and said, Mom, Jamie and I, you know, are at the diner and we're having those chicken croquettes. I go, you had the chicken croquettes too? I go, what? He goes, well, Mom, I saw your post and it's been in my head all day. So they went down and had chicken croquettes. They loved them. But
wow. Is that every Sunday or is this?
Every Sunday. Every
really?
Sunday. It's the Blue Plate special. And they say that if they don't run out, which they usually do, but if they don't, they'll have some on Monday
as
well.
I don't think, I can't remember last time I had chicken croquettes.
It's good to know. We never used to have them homemade. We used to get them frozen.
Okay.
I thought they were just as good too. But then one of my past managers says, you know, this is really easy to make. And they are delicious.
Fantastic. Cool.
Tooting my
own horn. Hey, Julie's in the house. Yeah.
Julie is in the house. And we're going to go on a short break. You're listening to Food for Thought. We'll be right back with Julie Barron, President and CEO of Make-A-Wish New Hampshire.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. Nearing the end of the show on Tuesday, we have Julie Barron, President and CEO, Make-A-Wish New Hampshire, in studio with us, and always love to hear what is happening. And have you had any updates on Holly Blanchard?
Oh, yes. Well, no updates other than she's doing really, really well. And we don't have the announcement yet whether she made the top 15, so we're hoping that's
a couple more days,
that's just a couple more days
the 10th,
before they announce that. So, but
how
she's having
exciting.
A great time, and, you know, she's so sweet, though. She keeps emailing, like, well, you know, I haven't really had time to work on this yet. I'm like, Holly, don't worry about it. Everything will be here when you get back. We'll figure it out. Don't worry about it, but it's
well,
really
she
sweet.
She might not be back. Remember that.
I know. Well, that's true.
Has a Make-A-Wish child ever had a wish of attending a Miss America competition or being somehow involved in it?
We haven't yet. Of course, we had the wish child that, you know, was a Miss New Hampshire who went on to compete a couple of years ago. But that's got to be coming with all the connection we have with that organization. Who knows?
Right. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Some little princess out there that, you know, that would be their wish. Pretty cool.
Indeed.
Pretty cool.
We got a John Cena wish in this morning.
A what?
John Cena, the wrestler.
I don't know.
WWE.
John Cena?
Yeah.
So somebody wants to meet him or wrestle
with
him?
Wants to meet him.
Really?
Yeah. And
has,
and that's their wish.
And is he pretty accessible or have
Very
you reached
accessible.
Out to his
He's
people
done
yet?
Some wishes
oh.
before.
Okay.
So, and he does an amazing wish. So he's.
It must be a little boy, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah, a little boy.
Although
he's
women
six.
Are into wrestling.
Oh.
I mean, there is a lot of women into it, but I just assumed it was a boy.
You would think a lot more boys would go for something like that because that's just the right age.
Yeah, we do get quite a few different wrestling wishes. Well, it was really cute because, you know, you bring what you go out to visit with a child to first kind of find out what their wish is going to be. You know, you bring some icebreaker gifts, but you don't really know them, so you don't really know what to bring. So I always bring a bunch of little stuff and, you know, so that... And you kind of see what they gravitate to, and after you meet them, you ask a bunch of questions, so you know the next time you go out to visit, because, you know, you can never go empty-handed. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I brought in these two little wrestling characters that had been donated to us, and right to them, like not interested in anything else I brought. So... You know, about an hour later when he said he wanted to meet John Cena's wish, I was like, yeah, not surprised.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
so
really
he
cute.
Knew right away pretty
he
much
right
what
away.
He wanted.
Yeah.
Well, we know
that
Triple H is from Bedford. I'm not sure if he still lives here much of the year, but has anybody ever put him as their wish? Because he's like a big deal.
Yeah.
Not that I know of. I don't think a child from New Hampshire ever has. But that might be a nice little adder for him if he's still around.
You know, I know he still is, and I think he's here part of the year. So that might be a nice little add-on because he did Triple H. I forget his name, but he's a big deal.
Oh, we'll have to research that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So what else is happening upstairs with all your little wands in your hands?
Oh, yay. Well, we have, we are going over the numbers this morning. We have 55 wishes pending right now.
Oh, my.
So where they're all in different stages of happening, whether they've just been assigned to wish granters and we're kind of working through that, you know, to start out, you know, our fiscal year actually ended, so we're starting the new one. But the fun thing this morning is that we were we're planning kind of a Halloween get together for all the wish families. We're going to do it kind of right in the office, a big trick or treat. So that should be fun.
Here That's in the Beacon the building? 29th,
right here in the Beacon building. Yeah.
Oh, my.
And I think I heard my brother might have something to do with it, too. Or he's going to
yes,
be helping.
Yeah. So it should be good. Yeah. So
my brother is like crazy. Crazy good. I'm saying crazy good.
Brian's an awesome guy.
He is going to get into this.
I know. When Nikki from our office was like all excited, she's trying to talk the staff into it this morning. You know, it's like, come on, we all have to dress up. We'll invite all the wish kids. Everybody can come in the afternoon. We'll have trick or treat. You know, so maybe some other people in the office building might want to do trick or treat too.
I'm
we could do some fun stuff.
It's
That'd
very
be great.
But we got to figure out what you're going to be,
I know,
Miss Julie.
I know. There's a lot of pressure because, you know, you just want it to be perfect, you know, because everybody's going to like, you know, what's Julie going to do?
So right. They'll be judging.
They'll be judging.
What's Julie going to do?
So anybody got any ideas? But it's going to have to be really cool, you know?
Really, really cool.
So,
really cool.
A superhero, perhaps?
I'm thinking superhero, maybe.
I mean, what kid doesn't love a superhero?
Yeah, and I'm,
it's
you know, you
one,
can
though.
Tell by going up to our office and for our staff retreat, I did a whole big thing. I changed the A, you know, in the Avengers, and I put an M and a W in front of it and made a whole logo, Make-A-Wish, you know, for all the Marvel characters, and everybody was a different character. So all the characters are up in the office, so, you know. You can't have too much fun. That's the way I look at it.
It must be like a fun, fun place to work at upstairs. It must be.
Yeah. So we're kind of working on that. And I don't know if people heard about or they might have read about it in the paper, but we just did a huge wish for that little boy I was telling you about who wanted to be a magician, Seth. Yeah, there were over 800 people there. It was absolutely amazing.
Was it in Dover or where was it?
No, it was out at Rochester, at the Rochester Opera House. Yeah. Right. So that was, you know, truly and absolutely
And you had a professional
amazing
magician
wish.
As well,
yes.
right? As
so
part of
the boys,
show.
So Seth and his brother did a show, and they had, you know, been working for months and months to do that. And then there were, you know, the professionals who had helped them, you know, learn a little bit, also did a show after and helped him out. And, you know, so it was quite an event.
Is there video somewhere that we might at some point be able to see?
Yeah, I have a feeling that might be part of the breakfast debut next year. I don't know. But yeah.
Breaking news.
So we might use that as part of the video for next year.
Fun.
But yeah.
Very cool.
Well, there'll be pieces of it online.
So you say 55 going forward for this current fiscal year. Is that a manageable number or?
It is. It's about 14 or 15 more than we had last year at this time. Wow. Of course, so referrals will keep coming in during the year. So our goal is we're on track if we can do it. With the help and support of an amazing community is grant 90 wishes this year. So we just ended our fiscal year last year granting 84 wishes. And we're so proud of that because that's up from last year. But hopefully we'll be able to get to that 90 wishes because we still know that there's that looming number out there of 112 kids that are diagnosed every year, which, you know, means that we're still not reaching all of them, but we're getting closer and closer every year. So we've also been working a lot on outreach, and we just put together an amazing outreach plan to really not only just work with the medical community around the state, but also general outreach, because we must be missing those, you know, not only do we want to make sure we have the resources to grant the wishes, but we want to make sure that all those kids know how to find us and those referrals are coming in.
So how does that happen? I mean, does a doctor who recognizes a child with a life-threatening illness, is that one of the first things he or she does, perhaps, is speak to the parent about that?
It is. They speak to the parents about it. They reach out to us. So a child can be referred from a healthcare professional, any healthcare professional, or you know, any close member of their family, so the parents, the wish child, can even refer themselves, you know, and then once that referral comes in, you know, then we verify with their primary doc that they do have a life-threatening medical condition. And then that's when we would assign the two volunteer wish granters. So the 55 that I was talking about are, you know, they've been referred in. The docs have verified that they do have a life-threatening medical condition, and now we're in the process of
finding out what the wishes are.
Right, and right. Assigning volunteer wish granters, and our volunteer wish granters, they're trained to call within the first 48 hours. So they call them, they set up an appointment, and then they go out, and you know, and then the rest of the timeline is on the families. You know, when it's good for them, depending on what the wish is, and you know, pulling all the resources and everything together to make it happen. So, yeah.
Thank you, Julie.
Good to see you.
Thank you very much.
It's great to see you.
All right. Food for Thought is ended for another day. And up next is Kale and Company. And we'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye.